Don't need the annual change, but how can I not have a change?
Testing mic one, testing mic one.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Hope everybody had a great weekend. We've called to order the Recreation Committee meeting today, Monday, October 4th, 8:30 a.m. And item number one is the call to order, which I have just done. Item number two is approval of the minutes from the March 1st and the July 6th meetings.
Move to approve.
Second.
All right, we got a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. Item number three is the public comment period, where anybody in the audience would like to come up and give us a couple of minutes of your time to tell us what's on your mind, if anything. You're welcome to do it. Just come up, state your name and address. Anybody? Well, that's good. Thank you very much. We must be doing something right. All right, item number four is employee years of service. Steve, I will defer to you.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of committee. I'd like to call Ryan Johnson. Ryan, can you come up here with me? Please. We have a 15 years of service recognition here today.
So, all right, Ryan.
There you go. This is Ryan Johnson. And Ryan came to us as a very accomplished baseball player. I'll tell a little bit about his background. But he came to us and started with us in 2006 as a recreation specialist. But prior to that, he was the 2004 Louisville Slugger All-American. He was in 2008, he was inducted into the Hall of the Wall of Fame at the College of Charleston, and in 2017 he was the Charleston Baseball Hall of Fame inductee. After only being with us for about 1 year, actually a little bit less than a year, he assumed the role of baseball coordinator in September of 2007. He's also been involved in all sorts of programs. We nominate people to be involved in the LEAD program. A LEAD program is through the South Carolina Parks and Recreation Association, and it's just rising professionals in the area that we nominate to be a part of a program where they meet with peers across the state. And you will be completing that in December, I believe. You'll be completing that in December. So he's done a great job and represent the Mount Pleasant Recreation Department, and getting a chance to meet with other people across the state and other, they do specialized training in different areas, and he has a bright future ahead of him. Just recently, just actually a few weeks ago, when Garrett Hetherington resigned and got a new job, he moved to the fundamental coordinator. So he's gone from just being baseball to being in charge of an endless, from baseball, basketball, soccer, lacrosse, and it goes on and on. He has a very full plate ahead of him. Ryan is an outstanding performer in the athletics division. He set the standard for the division's evaluation and draft processes. The goal of the division is to get all sports evaluations and drafts to look like Ryan's, and the way he organizes it, because you do it so well. Baseball participation numbers have steadily been on the increase season after season under his leadership, and Ryan possesses exceptional communication and organization skills, and the department is better because he's been with us for 15 years. So congratulations, Ryan. Thank you for your service. We appreciate it. All right.
All right.
Thank you, Ryan.
We need a home run derby between Ryan and Eric.
My money's on him.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right. That's everything, Steve? That's just a simple, yes, Ryan? Mm-hmm. Okay. Item number five is the review and comparison of rental fees.
Yeah. Earlier in the month, you had asked me to take another look. In 2019, we did a comparison with other areas in the rental fees for athletic fields, activity rooms, gyms, and staffing fees that are associated with it. And that resulted in a fee increase for the Mount Pleasant Recreation Department that took effect in January of 2020, right before everything changed with the pandemic coming on us. But you can see our fees. So we're just 2 years down the road, and we're just comparing our fees again with those of our neighboring municipalities. And you can see the on the left-hand column,
You've got the Mount Pleasant Recreation Department fees. We're showing our residents, our non-resident fees, and then also the lighting fees. For the most part, if you look across the board, we're very close in comparison. Resident, like for example, athletic fees, we're at $50 per hour. Charleston's at $45. North Charleston does $150 a day. Goose Creek has $50 per hour for residents. Hanahan's $50 per hour. Irmo Chapin is $65 an hour, and Rock Hill is $60 an hour. Pretty close. Really across the board, most of them are very, very similar, where we may be a $5, $10, $15 more than some of them, but in line with most of them. Hanahan, for example, their gyms, they do it completely differently than we do, than most places do. It's not an hourly rental rate. They just charge $1,000 a day for their gym rental, rather than an hourly rate. But it's just a fee comparison. We're not coming here to present anything or make a recommendation for changes. It's just looking at where we are now in comparison with the other municipalities for your information and discussion.
Jim?
So I know with the pandemic that it's kind of hard to assess, but one of the reasons that we changed the rental fees to be more comparable with neighboring communities was because the town was essentially subsidizing a lot of this, and we were hoping to recoup some of those expenses. Did you find that these changes in fees had any sort of chilling effect on usage of the facilities? Was there a drop in usage? Did it stay the same? I mean, I know it's so hard to say with the pandemic, but and now that we're you know, a couple years in, where would you say we are with that?
As you mentioned, it is a little difficult because everything dropped off the face of the earth right after we put them into place. But we're pretty much back on track. I mean, I don't think there's much of a chilling effect at all. I mean, okay. People are aware we have gone up. We sometimes get, there may be some grumbling sometimes because they know what it used to be. But for the most part, we're very, our facilities are filled. We're renting facilities. People are utilizing them. Okay. And it hasn't had much of an impact of people not paying the rental fees.
Okay. Jake?
My question was along those lines, but kind of the reverse, is how many of the requests for field spaces and gym spaces can we not fulfill, or do we not have space for? I mean, how much is left on the table where people are wanting to utilize fields that aren't able to get in?
Jimmy, can you speak to that?
Yeah, I would say not too much. I'd say 8, 9 out of 10 requests we fill.
Okay. Is that fully fulfill or give them some time of their requested time?
Time based on their request as best we can.
Yeah.
8, 9 out of 10 times, I would say.
Okay. I mean, I would say the only feedback that I've heard of people that don't get all the time they request would be soccer, yeah. I would think. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, there's a lot of soccer groups as part of the problem, and so compared to what we offer. So when you pull all together, the inventory is just not there.
Yeah.
But I would say more with soccer, but with the other sports, not so much.
Okay. And certainly not as a result of the fee change, anything along those lines, but simply as a matter of making sure our programs are needs are met, and then with the inventory that's remaining after that, we try to equitably distribute the field space to all the different groups that are requesting it.
You know, I ride around and look at the fields a lot of the times, and I see them empty a lot of times. I mean, what is the ratio between the fields being used and how much they're staying empty? Like Jones Center, I'll go by the Jones Center. I don't see anybody on the fields out there.
Well,
even on the weekend.
The fields are used. The fields are obviously during the daytime. There's not much usage during the daytime. In the afternoons, they get used quite extensively. Now, you know, we have our programs and our sports that are coming up in the evenings, and we make sure that they're available for those sports. I'm not so sure. Are there many fields in our rectangular fields? They're used pretty extensively. Possibly in some of the diamonds and those sort of things, there may be some space available.
Talking about.
Jimmy, do me a favor. Come up here and give me your name and I'm sorry for the record, just so you'll be recorded.
Jimmy Millar, Deputy Director with Recreation.
There you go.
Depends on what time you're talking about, Mr. Santos, when you are looking at the fields, but I'd say you're probably talking a Saturday then, right?
It's been Saturdays, yeah.
Yeah, probably. We probably start phasing out what we got going on out there. Midday, 1-2 on a Saturday is when things start dropping off. So Saturday afternoon, for instance, you're not going to see a whole lot of activity at Jones Center, for instance. But that could change from weekend to weekend.
Yeah.
So it's hard to answer the question. It fluctuates. But, I mean, I know we're using our fields a lot and with the rentals and our usage. So
let me ask you, softball. The portable fence that we were going to use, do we have that yet, or is
it still with
it's being ordered. We put it out for bid. They had to put a bid extension because we know that there's somebody that did not get their bid in time, but we know we wanted to make sure we got a bid from them.
Yeah. Okay. I was under the impression they were the only ones that made that fence.
They are. They are the only ones that make that fence, and they're the ones that didn't put in their bid. There were some distributors of theirs that put in bids for them.
Okay. I was just wondering, because I know the softball folks want to be able to use that field, and right now, if you hit it past the outfielder, it goes to the fence, that's an automatic home run, you know, because the field's so big. So I just wanted to check on that and see how that was going. Good. Anything else? Guys, any questions? Jim, you good? All right. Thank you very much. Our next item is discussion and possible action regarding Town of Mount Pleasant noise ordinance. I put that on there because we've had some meetings lately with the restaurants down on the creek about noise ordinances. There's been some tickets that have been given out by our police department because of the noise on it. So we decided to kind of take a look at it and see. We held a meeting with most of the restaurant representatives. I think we only had two owners there. Wade was one of them. Wade, thanks for joining us. That came, and we were trying to look at this ordinance and see what we could do to find some balance between the restaurants and the homeowners who live around there. I was born and raised on Shem Creek. We've had music, you know, out on the creek for as long as I can remember. But now, with more and more people moving in, more and more restaurants being built, it's getting to a point to where we need to have some type of balance on that, and not just the creek. I'm getting calls now about, you know, the post house down on the old village with music late at night and things like that. So it's starting to, you know, become a problem, not just on the creek. So we sat down and we talked about it, and we talked about different ways of being able to identify when it's too loud. And what I'll do is Eric, I'll defer to you to talk about our meeting. And Chief, I see you're here as well, so you can jump in anytime you'd like as well. So Eric.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Santos. Good morning to you, members of the committee. We have a couple ordinances at play. One of them is the noise ordinance, which, just as an opinion, perhaps is a little dated, refers to things like steam whistles and electric horns and gongs and clappers. I am old enough to remember the gong show that used to be on television when I was a kid. So, you know, some changes need to be made for sure. However, if a business, say, has a permit, then they are not violating the noise ordinance. So that sort of pushes the noise ordinance aside, although it could stand to be updated. And the special event permit that we've been operating under limits any business, say a restaurant on Shem Creek who's having outdoor entertainment with amplified music, to 4 permits per year. And that has been problematic, I think, from an operating standpoint for businesses. And so we spent the last few years trying to, using some discretion, which the police department has, in trying to strike that balance between operators, businesses, having the opportunity to operate in a reasonable way, and also the homeowners who deserve some quiet enjoyment of their property, right? Perhaps more than some. So it's been a delicate dance at times. I know we've done our best, PD, Christian, we've all done our best to approve special events with caveats that go a long way to preserving as much as possible peace and tranquility. But adjustments, I think, need to be made. We're looking into that now. Perhaps it's good for, I see Mac is here, to weigh in, if he's prepared to do so, on how both these ordinances look from just a legal perspective. And maybe after that, a moment where Chief Arnold can mention what the police department's been working on in terms of decibel meters and things like that.
Good, good. Yeah, Mac, if you'd like to, name and address, name and occupation for the record, please, sir.
Morning, members of the committee. Mac DeFord, staff attorney for the town. With respect to the noise ordinance, my understanding is that the police department is looking into ways to perhaps enforce in more of a scientific way by including decibel reading machinery in determining when noise is becoming unreasonable. So legal can certainly craft a proposed ordinance to address that methodology and enforcement.
Yeah, I know that Wade does it at Saltwater Cowboys. He actually called up the person who usually complains the most and you know, said, can you hear the music? And, you know, the guy said, yeah. So then he turned it down, and the whole time he had the decibel meter going down, and finally the guy said, I couldn't hear it. And so that was the point at which he sets his decibel meter. I don't want to take words out your mouth away, but I think that's what you told me. And so now he has that at that certain level, and he can always walk by and check and make sure the music is below, at or below that decibel level. And I think that protects our police department as well. When they come, they have something that's concrete. They can say that it's too loud, rather than having making a judgment decision whether what's too loud and what isn't. So I like the idea of the decibel meter, to be honest with you. Anyhow, anything else?
Chief? Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've done a lot of research on this to include reviewing ordinances and a variety of different types of decibel meters from other municipalities throughout the area. And we come up with some recommendations. Decibel meters are very affordable. They range anywhere from $15 to a couple hundred dollars. So from that standpoint, it's not an issue at all. From our perspective, it helps our officers in making a determination. I don't want to be so hard and strict on the ordinance that they'd lose their discretion. You know, if you go to a birthday party and the neighbor's complaining and you talk to the person, it's the first time they've ever had an interaction with us, and can you turn it down and say yes? I don't necessarily know that the appropriate thing is a citation for that individual. What we're trying to do is the repeat locations and the excessive that are interfering people's quality of life. The decibel meters, like I said, they're very affordable. We would go to the property line after council has determined decibels and the range of acceptability, measure it, record it on body camera, the reading, and it would be prosecuted like any other misdemeanor offense. So
I think that's the best way, because you now have something, like you say, scientific, that you can say, so that I'm just having to make their mind up whether that's allowed or not. We have a way of doing it. And not only that, but it protects the restaurants and the clubs down on the creek as well, because now they know what range they can go to without having to be fined. And you know, another thing that, and I think me and Eric talked about this briefly, is the fact that I think now we're giving the managers the ticket, correct, when you come?
Correct.
So I'm thinking that since the owners are the ones that are actually responsible at the end of the day, and they're the ones that are on the list when they get their permit for the town, that we may want to look at holding the owners responsible for that instead of the managers. I think by doing that, they will make sure that, you know, that they're in compliance with it, because they're not going to be wanting to be fined or penalized or have their names out there. So I think that's something that we might want to look at as well, as seeing if we can't change that to the owners. We hold them responsible for other things, correct?
Absolutely. They're the ones that receive the business license.
Right. So I think if they're receiving the business license, maybe they should be the ones that are held responsible. Mm-hmm. And I think if we do that, it'll take the pressure off of the managers, because they'll know exactly what they have to do. And that's just my opinion. I'll open it up for you guys. Anything?
No, I agree with you. I'm reading the ordinance, not this one, 116, but the 132 noise ordinance. Mm-hmm. And it just said that in the volume or whatever in such a manner with such volume as to annoy or disturb the reasonable quiet, blah, blah, blah. It's, yeah, what does that mean? I guess everybody has a different level of reasonable quiet.
It is challenging, sir.
Yeah.
Another area where we get noise complaints are loud mufflers. We do get these calls, so it would be helpful to establish something to address those types of things as well.
Yeah.
Please, I live by an intersection, and man, those guys with those big mufflers go take off at 2 in the morning. They wake everybody up. Yeah. Okay, good. No, thank you. Jim?
Yeah, I think that the going with the decibel meters is probably the way to go. I'm concerned about the businesses, and I want to ensure that, you know, live music is preserved and that, you know, the musicians that perform and their livelihoods are not endangered by this. And I think that, you know, this balance must be struck, because when you have a home near Shem Creek, I think there, you know, there's an expectation, like your home is next to a working restaurant. It is next to a dry dock. Like that's, and there's going to be some level of noise that's going to be associated with that, that I think, you know, you make the choice of where you live. And I think that what we have to balance with that is the power of amplification potentially going beyond what is expected. So
good. Well, go ahead.
Just to kind of add to that, correct me if I'm wrong, but as of right now, I mean, the way you read this ordinance is, I mean, you could technically say no amplified music is allowed at all. So this would kind of give them the flexibility and the actual guidance to say how loud it can be, yeah. I guess. But I don't know what the decibel reading should be. I don't know if we've gotten into that.
Well, I'll tell you what, Wade, I saw Wade come in. I know you missed the public comment period, but why don't you come up? I'll give you a couple minutes to tell us how you do it and how it's worked for you. Just give your name and address for the record.
Great. Thanks for allowing us to come in. My name is Wade Bowles. I'm with Saltwater Cowboys in Shem Creek. And as Councilman Santos mentioned earlier, we have created a little system that seems to be working with our local neighbor. When he would call and complain, I reached out to him and said, there's got to be something that's going to, it works for everybody. We understand the situation. So I recalled back years ago being on the creek when I worked for my dad and we had live music. We created this system with a digital meter. And like Mr. Santos said, I got him on the phone. We were playing our music and I said, can you hear it? And he said, yeah. And I said, can you hear it now? I cut it down and we reached a level that was acceptable for him. And he's quite a ways away. It's a little surprising that he actually hears the music, but the sound travels over water and we certainly understand that. And so I'd get him on the phone. We got it down to an acceptable level that worked for him. And it was really not the sound of the music. It was the bass. Mm-hmm. That was coming through and he hears it thumping and of course I can understand. I mean, if I lived there, it'd be a nuisance to me too. So we have a little tech system that goes on. If he hears it, we know where we need to be. But one of my managers on duty during live entertainment time is responsible for measuring that sound. There's always a sound manager when we have live entertainment. And the level that we were able to establish that was acceptable for our neighbor was an 85 to 90 decibel range. That level we measured at the top of the stairs facing the music. So, I mean, it's pretty close. We found that number worked for us and him. And I think that if there's some other restaurants here present, they would say that this gentleman is, you know, got issues not just with me, but with other folks too. So the system works based on what we've been using. We've created a really good relationship with him. I hope that maybe something that would be helpful for you guys to establish. The gentleman that came up here earlier mentioned about the distance of the property line. That's the only, I think, inconsistent thing is how far before you start measuring, how far away from the sound it works. But for us, it was probably, what do you guys think? 25 feet from the music, something like that? About 25 feet from the musician, we would measure, and if it read 85 to 90 was the acceptable range for our neighbor.
Good.
So if that may help, so I hope so.
That helps a lot. Any questions?
Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
We good?
Jim?
No, thank you.
Thanks, Wade.
Jake? So I think Chief said that your idea would be to measure from the property line, correct? I feel like that's probably the only way to do it, seems like to me.
That's one method of, like Mr. Bowles said, we'd have to determine where we would do the measurements.
Yeah.
But it seems logical to do it from the property line.
Yeah.
Because
if you have a very, very large property, theoretically, you could do things that are a little bit louder, right? Than if your property line is right next, I don't know. So anyway, that's just my thought. But I'd like to go ahead and make a motion that we, this is going to be a little bit confusing, I think, but to make a motion that we send this to full council and instruct the staff attorney to rewrite the ordinance in conjunction with the police department to add a decibel range or meter to this ordinance.
I think first what we need to do is decide whether we want to use the decibel meter or not. We think it's a good idea. Eric, I'll defer to you and see what you think.
I would just say respectfully to the committee, this is probably the realm of the PJL committee to recommend ordinance adjustments to council or council itself. So perhaps if you're okay with it, because we haven't flushed out the ordinance, the decibel meter particulars either. A recommendation to PJL, or we take this information and give the same presentation there, or we can put it on, you can put it on the council agenda. It's just sort of a, not really a discussion, but an update of what took place here. And then council could either act on it at council or send it back to PJL. But typically PJL is the entity that takes up construction or reconstruction of ordinances.
So you said bring it to council, or did you want to go to?
My motion is to take it to council. I requested it to be on PLJ last month and it didn't happen. And PLJ is not meeting this month. And our citizens have been talking about this for a few months now, and I don't want to kick the can down the road. So
you got a second?
So
I'll give it a second,
okay,
for discussion.
Sorry. I just to clarify your motion, Jake, because I'm trying to understand.
Yes.
So the motion is to direct the staff attorney to redraft the ordinance.
Correct.
Before next Tuesday's council meeting.
Correct. But it would just be the portion that involves it really is just the portion that involves defining what the noise is, because right now it just says an unreasonable level that disturbs quiet. So it would just, I think, would just be replacing that
what number are we replacing?
With a reading. Well, that's, I think that that's something that they should just work out with the police department.
We're not there yet on a number. You can choose a number. Typically, every time this matter has been discussed, and as long as I've been here, there has been pretty heavy involvement from residents, and we've had some involvement from residents on this matter. But you're asking us to construct an ordinance to go right to council. I'm not sure we have enough information to fully construct the ordinance. We have the bones. We have a lot to flush out on the staff side.
Yeah. Okay.
What if we pick a number on the decibel meter and it's too much?
Right.
And then we're setting up a problem with residents in the future.
But I think that's, I totally hear what you're saying, Eric. I really do. But remember, as you know, there's two readings of council. So it's writing an ordinance. We can put a placeholder number, but we have a couple of months to figure out exactly what that number should be before final reading. I don't know. I just don't like the idea of continuing delay. We received a petition with lots and lots of signatures 3 months ago. And we're just now talking about it for the first time and saying we need more time. It's just not very responsive to our community, in my opinion. So, but if other people feel differently, that's why there's nine of us.
Yeah, well, we've had meetings with the restaurant owners and the managers. They came in and we discussed it, and I think we were all pretty much on the same page that something needs to be done. Because, like I said, we're just trying to find a balance between the music and the citizens' quality of life, and that there is a balance. The key is we just need to find it. The 85 worked for Saltwater Cowboys. Like I say, it may not work for, you know, somebody else. So the key is
that was measured inside their place, which is a whole different deal than the property line, too. That would be way too loud for the property line. But
yeah. So Mac, you hear what he was saying about the ordinance. I mean, it's not really a big ordinance to be able to amend, but do you understand what he's trying to ask you to do?
Yes, sir. I would like to respectfully submit to have a little bit more time to work with the police department so that we can craft an ordinance that is going to be more appropriate to submit to council. And the turnaround for
how much time do you think you might need? I mean, we can call a recreation committee meeting anytime, so it's not like we have to wait till next month.
We'll have something ready for council.
Okay.
And it won't be perfected, and we'll craft something up. I understand what Mr. Rambo's saying, because it anything that discusses unreasonable, we're sort of defining what unreasonable is, and we start there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And we'll come up with a number, and we'll have time after council, after first reading, presumably, to try to perfect the ordinance.
Okay.
We'll craft something up.
Okay, good. All right, so we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Yes, sir.
A few words.
And your name, sir?
Jacob Robertson.
And you are, I mean?
Booking manager for Vickery's.
For Vickery's?
Yes, sir.
Okay, come on, I'll give you 2 minutes. Come on up.
I'm sorry I wasn't at the last meeting. Thank you all for being here this morning. I like the decibel level. I think that is definitely a set in stone. I think that's the big problem now, is it's such a gray area. I guess the only concern I have is, we've done music in the past years, as you said. I've been booking music at Vickery's for 5 years now, and it has never really been an issue. We would get a call every now and then, and, hey guys, the music's loud, we'll turn it down. That was as far as it normally went, and we did. It was never really an issue until this past year, and it seems to be the same person that is habitually calling. I think where I'm coming from is, I definitely see where, if you live in the area, it's fair for residents to be able to be peaceful in their own homes. That's fair. But also, I don't think it's fair to the other people that live in the surrounding areas and visit the creek frequently, along with tourists, specifically for the entertainment aspect, for two or three people to outweigh the opinion and the enjoyment of hundreds and thousands of people. I started the petition. We have almost 3,500 signatures. Tons of people come to the creek. They love living in that area for that specific reason. They love getting on their golf cart, coming down, listening to music. I think the decibel reading is the most set in stone way that we can say, hey, there's no gray area here. We're going to come. We're going to read this from 20 feet away in any direction, and it can't be over X amount of decibel levels. What that number is, I guess, is still up for discussion. But I like personally the idea of the decibel level.
Good, thank you. I do too. I think it protects our officers as well. When they come, they have something now concrete that they can look at instead of just having to make a decision. So,
right,
and that was a win-win for everybody.
Yes, sir. And you know, that was the thing is, as Mr. Rambo said, you know, what's loud to one person and is annoying to them may not be loud and annoying to someone else. So having a set concrete level that says, "Hey, man, I'm sorry that this bothers you, but it does not bother 300 other people. You know, you're one person making an issue out of really, you know, you're making a mountain out of an anthill," which I think is where we're at now. And, you know, it significantly has hurt our business. We've did music on set days for years. Now that we don't have it, we have significantly lost sales, especially on our Sundays. And, you know, that's a big thing for us.
Well, we certainly don't want that to happen.
Right, of course.
Absolutely. I know at our meeting, we had one of the restaurant owners was complaining about the loud music, and it wasn't coming from, you know, any bands or anything. It was coming from another restaurant right across from them.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think it's going to help everybody.
Yeah.
I really do. Well, I appreciate your comments.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you all for letting me speak.
Thank you very much. Okay. We had a motion and a second. Everybody, we discussed it. So, Eric, we're good on that,
yes,
right?
Sir.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Item number 7 is the program update.
All right. Thank you. As you can see, I believe you have the committee, the Recreation Committee program report. The Recreation Department's on. I mean, we're fully turned back on 100%. You can take a look at those athletic, youth athletics specifically, with the exception of tackle football. We're up in our numbers for every program we have. And,
is there a slide on it?
No, I do not have a slide on that.
All right.
All right. But it's our numbers are doing great. We are at 3,200 over 3,200 participants this fall compared to 2,600 last fall, which obviously last fall was in 2020. But even in 2019, we were at 2,800. So we're up over about 400 participants from our 2019 numbers. That's significant. We're doing very, very well. Tennis memberships are doing real well. You can see our facility rental revenue is solid. We're moving along on that, and bringing in good revenue to the town through our rental programs. Swim lessons are down a bit, but our senior centership membership is rebounding from where it was. It had really plummeted, as you can imagine, but it is rebounding, and we're making some headway there. Just on special events, some upcoming things I want to make sure that you're aware of. Specifically, we're going to be having the farmers market is being extended for 2 weeks. It was supposed to be, normally it ends at the end of September, but we extended. So there'll be another farmers market tomorrow and next Tuesday. That's going to be farmers only. It's not going to be all the other vendors and everybody else that's coming out to the market. But it's a beautiful time of year, and we're able to provide good vegetable produce source for our residents over there, and it was at the farmer's request, and we were able to extend that for 2 weeks. And then, of course, Children's Day, one of our biggest events, you know, one of our very, very large-scale events out at Park West each year. That's on October 17th. I hope you're able to make it out there. It's a wonderful event. 10,000 plus people usually come out to that event. It's beautiful. Kids have so much fun, and I always tell people the story that I used to come to that event with my kids way before I ever worked here. My wife, I remember her calling me when I was at work saying, "I found this most awesome event. You wouldn't believe how great it is." And so we started making that an annual trip for our family. Anyway. And then in our projects, track project is progressing nicely over right across the parking lot. Anticipated completion is around January 10th for the track project. Our first responders monument is moving along. They poured the concrete last week. It looks very, very nice. The concrete is poured. They did the tabby work over there. There is a delay on some bluestone delivery. We were expecting completion on that on November 30th to be completed on that project. Had a few delays where some of the concrete had to be redone a second time, so that slowed it down a little bit. But waiting for some bluestone delivery, and that project, like I said, should be completed November 30th. Waterfront Park, we are in full design for the other portion of Waterfront Park, and the submittals should be submitted in December, and expecting the bids to go out, for us to go out soliciting bids in May. So we're still on track there.
So, and, Steve, excuse me now. Mm-hmm? So DOT's approved it.
I see they approve it in different stages, but yes, they are completely on board with the project. The last stage is for us to give them our final submittals and final designs, and then they give another thumbs up. So they are continuously approving it as we go throughout the process.
Okay, I talked to the gentleman who's like the assistant when we broke the ground, and he was telling me he thought it was already approved.
They've approved where we are, and then as we finish the design and we show them, okay, this is what the final product is going to be. This is what the basketball court will specifically be. And this is what the dog park, you know, the specifics on each one of them. They still have to give a thumbs up on each one of those. And that should be happening in December. In Carolina Park, we have contracted with Edifice on a CMR contract, and moving forward with that. Jimmy, I think he said you texted me they were going to be starting construction in March. They expect to start construction in March. So they're right now doing some final pricing, getting pricing from their subs, and they'll be coming back to us with a guaranteed maximum price to make sure we know that. That the CMR process is kind of nice because they will give us a guaranteed maximum price, and we won't have cost overruns beyond that, unless of course we make a change order to the project. So that's all I have for you.
Yeah. I have a question.
Go ahead, Jake.
How are we in the rec department for like team sports and things? How are we handling COVID cases, or how does that go?
Anytime we have a COVID case that is reported to us, we usually it's a positive case that occurs, and somebody lets us know that there's been a positive case that somebody showed up to practice. We contact our risk manager, Dana Henderson. We speak with her. And depending on the date of the exposure, we then set we notify the teams of the amount of time that they have to be quarantined from our program. We cancel that team's participation if they had exposure to the positive case for, I believe it's 10 days from the last 10 days from the last exposure.
So if there's one child on a team who goes to practice, the entire team is then has to be closed for 10 days. So like it could be like an outdoor baseball practice and they're really not like huddling together for long periods of time. They wouldn't meet the definition of exposure, but we're canceling them for 2 weeks anyway.
That is correct. That's what we're doing. It's very difficult for us to know how much close contact occurred or did not occur. And, We are following those protocols to go ahead and we cancel that team's participation in the sport for the 10 days.
Okay. I guess I've just heard a lot of issues with that. You know, the parents talk and they, even though we don't say who the positive case was, they know it, you know, and they're like, you know, no one was within that kid. You know, I don't know. Just don't understand. At what point are we going to just say, you know, if you're sick, stay home. And if you're not, you can play.
I don't have an answer for that. I mean, I would love to be able to say when we will be able to stop doing a lot of the procedures that we're doing. But I don't have an answer for you on that at this point.
I want to ask you one quick thing. I see the youth tackle football down at 219. Does the Wando start in the C team? Do you think that has anything to do with our numbers?
Absolutely. And that has a large portion of it.
And Beckham C team now.
The C teams that they have very large rosters. Our rosters are much smaller rosters, and we guarantee playing time. So it's a real... People like to be able to say they're playing for Wando, they're playing for a high school, you know, and then they're getting coaching from a high school level, you know, coaching. We have our advantage on our end is that we have a great program. It's a very well-established program, you have smaller rosters, and you are able to have people, they know that they're going to get playing time, they're going to be involved in the program. I'm not so sure what kind of playing time they get on the roster when they have 60 plus people on a roster for those other teams. But certainly that has pulled many people from our program.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay, guys, anything else? All right, thank you everybody for coming. We are adjourned.
Thank you.